I lived in Japan, so I had I do have an understanding of what it feels like to be in an earthquake, but nothing like this. So we were sat in a cafe, me and my girlfriend, and we just went on automatic pilot. And this is an earthquake. Jumped straight out into, luckily there was a space of a garden outside which was free of buildings, and it went on for 1 minute and 15 seconds, which if you actually sit there and count 1 minute and 15, it's a long time. And then we just went into, because we're Buddhists, we went into doing mantras thinking of all these people who are going to, buildings coming down, and then we could hear the screams from the children's homeless school nearby, and windows were breaking, and you could have buildings coming down from behind, and it was horrendous. It was so surreal that actually, and we were okay. There was no masonry falling around our heads, that we were okay. Actually, the fear or the worry came later, that where we're going to get water from, where we're going to get food from, what if people start getting, you know, angsty, and obviously Westerners have money. So we thought that that could happen. Actually, as I wrote in an email to you, the Nepali people are incredible. So calm, so loving, helping us, not charging us any money. So in the end, it was nothing, but it was scary.
Incredible, actually, like you said, that not one of them, they've lost their homes, their loved ones, and not one of them has sort of complained or moaned in the situation they find themselves
well,
in.
Well, the people I saw complaining generally were people with a lot of money, the Western people, and that's fine, but the Nepali people who have lost everything and maybe people have died, never said a single word of complaint, not once, just had a smile, a little bit... you can see they were just a bit despondent, I suppose, and a bit down in the dumps. But at the end of the day, they just carried on with their life. They have no benefits coming to them from anyone, so they know they've got to work and carry on with their lives.
And you just obviously come down from the mountainous regions as well, so you must be very worried. And we've heard, obviously, about the devastation up there and the fact that you can't get aid teams, relief teams out there to access those who may be wounded.
Well, that's I was at a place called Yolmo, and that's been really wiped out. So we're talking 30, 40 houses per village. Every single one gone. Deaths happening. One friend's actually gone up there. She's a German girl and she's a first aider, and she's making life and death decisions as to who gets in a helicopter. She might get it wrong. People left behind probably will die. Whiskey is being used to sanitize wounds. One girl, she was touching her legs. This woman, this young 16-year-old, paraplegic now because of an accident, but she was just left on the side of the road. No one can do anything for her. So it's horrendous. I cannot sort of express strongly enough how bad it is at the moment in Nepal.
It's shocking as well, and you can see images on the TV all the time, but when you're there yourself, like you and your girlfriend, and actually sensing it, smelling it, hearing the noise as well, must be quite overwhelming. Your friend having to make those sorts of decisions, I mean, how's she coping?
Well, I saw her when she came back again, that just before we left, which is, I can't remember, 24 hours ago now, I suppose. She was shell-shocked. She's only 24. But she's carrying on. She's going back up there again, and we went and bought a load of medicine out of our own money, and we don't have much. We just went out shopping, buying water, medicine, gave it to her. She's gone up with the army, and the army is completely unorganized but doing their best. And that's the problem. There's no organization happening in the mountain regions, and monsoon is coming, and there's a storm coming from Pakistan right now. People are dying, and then the winter will come, and these people will die and starve if we don't help.
I mean, I think people don't think about it as well, the fact that obviously there's that initial response, that's initial aid, but we're talking months and years to fully recover from this, aren't we? This is going to take millions and millions and millions of pounds of investment.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be years, absolutely. I mean, these up in the mountains, how do they've got to get the masonry and the rocks up there, so they've got to climb it. There's no roads. So it's absolutely years, and Kathmandu is going to take years as well. So my biggest concern is, the first few weeks, everyone is, oh yeah, it's terrible. A year later, it's going to actually, in some cases, it could be worse, because there's still no water coming, no sanitation, people are dying from illnesses and water infections and dysentery and things like that.
And you found yourself, what, sleeping in a tennis centre or tennis court, so was that correct, with other Nepalese people?
Well, it was kind of, there were good and bad, mostly bad, but there were some good points. That it was a big sort of a tennis court and a tarpaulin, and behind me I had this Tibetan family, and to my left the Nepali family, and then we had all these foreigners, and the fact was we all got on and we all helped each other, so there was some camaraderie going on there. But it's been tough, because the first earthquake was 6.9, I think, that, sorry, 7.9 or 7.8, people are saying. Then the second day there was one at 6.9, and we were walking down this little alleyway and the wall nearly came on top of us, and so we're constantly worried when the next earthquake was going to come. That was the biggest worry, not when it happens, it's when it will happen, the not knowing. So it was, yeah, pretty scary.
What does it feel like? I mean, I know that's a really simplistic question, but what does an earthquake feel like?
I was just saying to my parents in the car actually coming here, there's a sound to earthquakes. Not the rattling of the buildings, yes, that's a sound, but there's actually a sound from the ground, from the earth. It's like this moaning. I can't, like, it's unhappy somehow, and it is so disconcerting to feel that the ground under your feet is moving. It's not like being on a ship, because you know it's the sea. It's so disconcerting. And for the rest of the day, even now, I feel like I'm feeling earthquakes, because I'm like on a ship the whole time, because the tremors keep coming hour after hour, haven't stopped. Even when we're at the airport just 20 hours ago, it was still shaking, still going on.
Was there a part of you, because obviously you feel a lot of compassion, you've come back now, you've emailed people to sort of say, I want the Western world to help, is there a part of you that sort of regrets leaving in a way?
Yeah, I think, yes, definitely. I was even feeling that now, but I could have stayed, but the decision we decided to leave was, get out of the way. What are we doing? We're just going to be taking resources, taking the water. There is no water. Food is running out. I'm not a professional, nor is my girlfriend. So let the professional NGOs and soldiers come in, let them eat, and they can do a better job than us. So that's why, straight away, I've only just got off a flight, and I'm talking to you, and I've talked to another couple of agencies, companies to try to get this out there. So I think this is the best thing we can do, get money out to them.